The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
Marshall, good afternoon, happy Tuesday, and welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy in talk. Great show in store for you. My friend, CNN military analyst with an incredible career, Colonel Cedric Layton, will be joining us later in the hour. And at the end of the hour, a live report from Talk Media News, keeping us abreast of what's going on in our ever-changing, very fluid government, especially with our president tweeting the most outrageous things. We're going to talk about it. But first, let's take a look at what's going on in the world as well from our take with a little thing we like to call ripped from the headlines. The deficit rose to $779 billion in fiscal year 2018. Now, that is up 17% from last year, according to final figures released yesterday by the Treasury Department. Now, that's the largest number since 2012, when the country was still spending massively to stimulate an economy struggling to recover. Government receipts were flat this year from last year. Corporate tax collections actually fell $76 billion, or 22%. Why? Well, that's due to the Republican backed tax cut. Yep, tax cut for corporations. They paid $76 billion less, 22% less than you and me, regular Jane and Joe Q public. But that drop was actually more than offset by increased revenues from individuals and self-employment taxes. In other words, from you, from me, from John and J.Q. Public, the working class. The fiscal year ended September 30th. Spending rose 3% over the previous year, and that was fueled in part by increases to the defense budget agreed upon in September 2017 as part of a deal between Republicans and Democrats to head off that government shutdown. Social Security and interest on the federal debt also contributed to that increase. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a think tank that warns of the dangers of rising debt levels, said the deficit could reach $1 trillion as soon as next year, and that would still be below the high of $1.4 trillion that was reached back in 2009, but it's a vastly different economy now versus then. Maya McGuinness, the group's president, said, quote, those elected to Congress this year will face stark and difficult choices to put the debt on a downward path and protect our nation's social programs from insolvency. It's no longer a problem for the future. Now, the White House has steadfastly defended its policies, arguing that the yawning gap is a reason to cut deeper into social programs to balance out increases to the military budget. It's a long way, right, from that Republican stance under President Obama. Remember when the GOP-led House demanded about $1 trillion in budget cuts over 10 years in exchange for a debt ceiling increase leading to years of painful automatic reductions to federal spending? Hypocrisy at its finest, folks. They're singing a different tune. White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, a notable debt hawk while he was a congressman, said the numbers underscored a need to cut spending. Quote, the president is very much aware of the realities presented by our national debt. He said in a statement, and I continue, America's booming economy will create increased government revenues, an important step toward long-term fiscal sustainability, but this fiscal picture is a blunt warning to Congress of the dire consequences of irresponsible and unnecessary spending. Of their own doing. They're the majority. His comments echoed remarks by Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin last week in an interview with CNN, suggesting that Democrats' resistance to cutting Democratic spending on health care and other social programs was to blame for deficit increases. Of course, he said on CNN, quote, people are going to want to say that the deficit is because of the tax cuts. That's not the real story. No, it is. The real story, he said, is we made a significant investment in the military, which is very, very important. And to get that done, we had to increase non-military spending. No, you gave rich folks like the president and his family tax breaks. And you screwed, once again, as Republicans love to do, the classes below that top 1% and 2%. Now, not many non-military spending categories increased. Outlays for the Departments of Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, Energy, and Education, they all decreased. Health and Human Services and the VA, Veterans Affairs, increased slightly. The Agriculture Department saw a 7% bump from last year. The deficit figure actually is in line with what the CBO, the official government scorekeeper of federal fiscal policy, what they projected earlier this month. And in June, they projected the deficit would rise to 9.5% of the GDP in 2048. So it seems the CBO is right on target, sadly. Also in June, the federal debt, which aggregates annual deficits over time, stood at 78% of gross domestic product. That's the highest level since right after World War II, folks. Updated figures not immediately available in the past 24 hours. And as interest rates rise, servicing that ballooning debt could pose challenging. The Treasury spent $522 billion with a B last year, paying interest up 14% from the year before. Can't blame that on Obama. That's more than the cost of Medicaid, food stamps, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development combined. But it is smaller as a percentage of GDP than it has been historically. In late September, the House passed a bill that would extend individual tax cuts that are currently slated to end in 2025 at a cost of $631 billion over a 10-year window. Let's rip another. Nearly a year ago, as the debate over Republican tax breaks for the wealthy was near its end, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, insisted that the tax cuts didn't need to be paid for. Remember, because they pay for themselves? He said, quote, in December 2017, I not only think it will decrease the deficit, I think it will be beyond revenue neutral. In other words, I think it will produce more than enough to fill that gap. Well, whether the GOP leader actually believed his own rhetoric is an open question. But either way, we now know the Kentucky senator's claims were wrong. Spectacularly wrong. Maybe he was lying? The Republican tax breaks have, as Democrats and those familiar with arithmetic predicted, sent the nation's budget deficit soaring. So take a wild guess what Mitch McConnell told Bloomberg News he wants to do about it. Today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blamed rising federal deficits and debt on a bipartisan unwillingness to contain. He can't just say, take one for the team. You know what? We screwed up, the GOP. No, he can't even blame this on the Democrats. It's a bipartisan unwillingness to contain spending on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Said he sees little chance of a major deficit reduction deal while Republicans control Congress and the White House. Quote, it's disappointing, but it's not a Republican problem. It isn't. You have control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, you moron. Anyway, sorry, I digress. He said, it's disappointing, but it's not a Republican problem. That was an interview with Bloomberg News when asked about the rising deficits and debt. Actually, it is. If the people elected you, you're in charge, you have the power, you're pulling the purse strings, you're complaining about Democrats and blaming everything on Democrats, but you have the power. It is a Republican problem. And by the way, polls show when the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans and the president's a Republican, you guys get blamed if the economy goes south. You want to take the credit, you got to take the blame. He said it's a bipartisan problem, unwillingness to address the real drivers of the debt by doing anything to adjust those programs to the demographics of America in the future. I don't think that Republicans know the demographics. It's not all white and all male. He added that he believes Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid funding constitutes the real driver of the debt. Now, before we get into broader implications of that argument by Mitch McConnell, it's important to understand that we already know it's the Republicans' tax breaks for the rich that have made the deficit vastly larger. That's a fact. McConnell calls the increased federal borrowing very disturbing. That's what he said this morning. It's like watching an arsonist wring his hands over the ashes that he himself created. The Senate GOP leader helped create this mess. He hasn't earned the right to complain about it. These relevant details are really only part of the larger issue because during the debate over the Republican tax package, Democrats, they made an obvious prediction. GOP policymakers would blow a giant hole in the budget and then use the shortfall as an excuse to target social insurance programs like Medicare and Social Security, which they like to call entitlements. That, of course, is exactly what's happening. Larry Kudlow, the director of, by the way, who got on his knees and kissed my hands in the Fox Green Room. Larry Kudlow, the director of the Trump White House National Economic Council, recently said he wants to take aim at entitlements as early as next year. A few months earlier, we heard House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican from Wisconsin, saying he wants to see policymakers bring the budget closer to balance by cutting entitlements. And Steve Stivers from Ohio, Republican, of course, currently chairs the National Republican Congressional Committee, made the same argument back in the summer in August. Now Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is making the identical pitch. The election season has ushered in a head-spinning debate over which party truly supports pillars of modern American life, such as Medicare and Social Security. The president's repeatedly said, reality be damned, voters should look to Republicans as the champions of these programs. Quote, we're saving Social Security. The Democrats will destroy Social Security. We're saving Medicare. The Democrats want to destroy Medicare. Lie, 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 more lie. By the way, why don't we just start counting when the president tells the truth? Because that'll be easier than the head-spinning lies that come out of that man's mouth. Looking at the president's bizarre nonsense leading Republican officials from the White House, the Senate, and the U.S. House that keep admitting that they're eager to cut programs like Medicare and Social Security, well, maybe the public should believe them. When they have a hatchet in their hand and they're talking about programs that they call entitlements, that they like to have the entitlement to receive but don't want you and I to get, believe them. They're the hatchet men and women. Let's rip another. Voting advocates and civil rights groups have honed in on Gwinnett County and what they deem to be its excessive rejection of mail ballots because of voters' innocent errors and discrepancies. Late yesterday, a new lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Atlanta against Secretary of State Brian Kemp, the State Elections Board, and the Gwinnett County Elections Board over the issue. The suit, brought on behalf of five plaintiffs and underwritten by the Coalition for Good Governance, asks a judge to order that all rejected absentee ballots and absentee ballot applications be reviewed and be reinstated if possible. A separate letter was sent to Gwinnett County officials by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law made similar suggestions, and both actions come amid media reports, including those by Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that found Gwinnett County was throwing out a disproportionate number of such ballots. Through the weekend on Sunday, Gwinnett County rejected about 8.5% of such ballots, an AJC analysis found. That's across the state of Georgia. Less than 2% had been rejected, but Gwinnett, they had 390 rejected ballots. That accounted for about 37% of the total rejected ballots in the entire state. Gwinnett County, of course, has denied any wrongdoing. And isn't it interesting that somebody running for office has their hands in this? Because who does it affect? Disproportionately, minorities. What a surprise. That's what's ripped from the headlines. I'm Leslie Marshall. Colonel Cedric Layton coming up next. Your calls, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543, and more right after this. To have him with us. I am Leslie Marshall. He, our guest, is Colonel Cedric Layton. The Colonel is founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates. They're a strategic risk and leadership consultancy serving global companies and organizations. He founded the company in 2010 after he served in the U.S. Air Force for 26 years as an intelligence officer and attained the rank of Colonel. Colonel Layton can also be seen regularly on CNN, where he is a military analyst. He's become a good friend of mine over the years. More than a pleasure to have him back on the show. Colonel, thank you for joining us. Colonel Cedric Layton is in the house. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Leslie. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Colonel, I want to talk to you about everything Saudi Arabia, you might say. We know that there has been the disappearance and allegedly the death and murder, perhaps, of Jamal Khashoggi, the American via residency with a green card who works for, as a journalist, The Washington Post. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with the Saudi king and the crown prince, and he allegedly today pressed the Saudi leaders to move quickly with a transparent investigation of the disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi, even as Turkish officials are sifting through possible evidence at the last place he was seen alive, which was the consulate of Saudi Arabia in Istanbul, in Turkey. First of all, Colonel, can you tell us a bit about how much how in bed are we as a nation, the United States, with Saudi Arabia? And I say that, I don't just mean the president, perhaps, and he and his family's business dealings, but he was talking in a 60 Minutes interview with on CBS with Leslie Stahl, and he mentioned companies like Lockheed Martin and others. Are we in bed with Saudi Arabia to a degree that we would not be able to probe an American journalist's death?
Well, I don't think we're in bed that far, but we're definitely, we're definitely tied into the Saudis, and we've been tied into them in a really extensive way since the early 1980s, really it goes back to the Iranian Revolution, and we had been allies with the Saudis before. Franklin Roosevelt met with Ibn Saud, the first Saudi Arabian king, back during World War II, but the relationship really became a very warm relationship once the Iranian Revolution happened. And once that occurred, we had a situation where we felt that there would be a threat from Iran to the oil supply from the Middle East. And the Saudis asked us to provide them with air defense capabilities, with intelligence capabilities, with airplanes, with tanks, with all kinds of military hardware. So we became, I wouldn't say dependent, but we certainly had a big connection that became really, really big once the Iranian Revolution occurred, and then it really blossomed with the first Gulf War, and then a bit with the second Gulf War as well. But we've been selling the Saudis everything from AWACS planes to F-15s, and that kind of relationship, clearly means that we have a lot of commercial connections with them, a lot of connections with them in the defense industry, but it also means that we have a lot of leverage with them.
Wow, it's just fascinating. In your opinion, you've traveled throughout the world, you still do business throughout the world, and with your extensive background in the military, there are so many companies, Colonel, whether it be, Uber, or, I can't even list, there's just a whole bunch. Richard Branson overseas in the UK, who has ties here in the US, and the list goes on, that are canceling meetings with Saudi Arabia. Was it wise for the Secretary of State to go, in your professional opinion, both military and foreign policy-wise?
I think it was, Leslie, in this particular case, because there a message needed to be sent to the Saudis that this kind of behavior, if in fact they did it, and we have to say that just because we don't have a final report yet, but if in fact this happened at the behest of the Saudis and they killed Jamal Khashoggi at their consulate in Istanbul, that, of course, exceeds all international norms, and really the only way that you can handle something like that is with a face-to-face conversation between the Secretary of State and the King of Saudi Arabia and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. So the fact that they did this is that Pompeo went over there, the Secretary of State went over there, is, I think, a very good thing. The question then, of course, becomes what exactly did he say and what's the follow-through? But if he conveyed a strong message to the Saudis that this behavior is completely unacceptable, that is certainly a good thing in my personal and professional opinion.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Colonel Cedric Layton. Questions or comments regarding Saudi Arabia, the disappearance of the journalist, Mr. Khashoggi, and our relationship with the Saudis and more coming up. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Hang tight. To have with us Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton and Associates. Also, as I mentioned, he is you don't get the rank of colonel unless you've paid your dues in the military, and he certainly has done that and more. 26 years as an intelligence officer, attaining the rank of colonel and a military analyst for CNN. Colonel, thank you for holding. Welcome back. So you think it was a good idea for Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to go and to press the Saudi leaders as he has today? how transparent is this investigation? I mean, we've heard the president say, look, they deny it. He also said Putin denied pretty much everything, including the annexation of Crimea, which we know he did. How can we believe the Saudi king or the royal crown prince and others? Clearly, if in fact they ordered this man to be killed, if in fact they were responsible for this man to be killed, I don't think we'll ever find the body, any evidence of it, and certainly they would never admit to it. It would be internationally scandalous, and it could be a problem for them, not just politically, but certainly even economically.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the thing is that it wouldn't only be a problem for them economically, but we're potentially talking an existential problem for the Saudi monarchy, at the very least for the crown prince. So, you know, for them, this is a tough situation. The operation went, you know, horribly wrong, if what we suspect is true. And the other thing about this is that, you know, when you look at them and their interfacing with Secretary of State Pompeo, you can be sure that they won't tell him or President Trump the truth. Dissembling is not only a fine art that's practiced in the United States politically, but it's certainly practiced very, very much in the Middle East. And you can expect that they're going to lie to him, and you can expect that they will never admit that this happened.
So we're never going to get to the bottom of this or the truth. And quite frankly, this is not just a message to journalists, but this certainly is a message to those in Saudi Arabia who don't agree with the Saudis' position and actions on Yemen, who perhaps don't agree, as Khashoggi did not agree, with the treatment of women being arrested who are protesting and fighting for the right to vote and drive, both of which they did get, or people that feel that they can leave Saudi Arabia and seek shelter and have security elsewhere if they don't agree with the opinions and actions of the royal family.
Well, that's right. And the royal family, of course, controls everything. And, you know, when you look at what Khashoggi wrote, it's really not that critical of many parts of what the crown prince was trying to do, many parts of his program. In some ways, he even supported some aspects of it. And the family, Khashoggi's family, was very much connected to the royal family. So this was definitely a message to the people in Saudi Arabia who may be thinking about voicing contrary opinions. It was a message saying that not only are we watching you, but we're going to take action against you if you cross us. And this is a situation where, you know, we have an absolute ruler that is using methods that are a combination of medieval, you know, barbaric methods, as well as modern methods to keep track of the population. And that is a very dangerous thing for any political dissident, even somebody who has mild objections to some of the policies that are going on there. So it's a dangerous place for the Saudis, and they have to be very, very careful, you know, from if you're a dissident there. But the government also has to be careful, because it's a different world now, and we now know that these kinds of practices go on, and we have immediate reactions to them. And that's something I think the Saudis did not count on.
Let's take some calls. In Decatur, Georgia, Reggie is on line one. Reggie, question or comment for Colonel Layton?
Well, I have a question for both you and the colonel. If this abduction, disappearance, and an alleged possible brutal murder of this journalist can happen anywhere all over the world in other countries, are you guys definitely afraid, or do you think that it could possibly happen here to American USA journalists in this country too as well? Yes, no, why not?
I'm going to let the colonel answer that one, because he definitely would be more experienced and knowledgeable on that. Colonel?
I Leslie and Reggie, I think it's absolutely possible. I mean, when you look at the kind of rhetoric that we see at political rallies, even political rallies for the president, you have a built-up, fostered hostility to the press. And I know of at least one incident that is not public knowledge that affected a journalist in the D.C. area. And that kind of situation, I think, can happen in this country. I think any attack on journalists is an attack on freedom. And you can very much expect to see this kind of behavior coming in to the United States if we're not careful. And that's why it's really important to safeguard the freedom of the press and the ability for all of us to express ourselves.
Thank you for the call, Reggie. Let's go next to Michael calling from the Bronx in New York, line 3. Michael, question or comment for Colonel Layton?
Hi, how you doing? The thing that bothers me is that all this time, Trump has said that, you know, the Muslims are bad, the Mexicans are bad. He comes up with a Muslim travel ban and says that they're terrorists. But, and he uses 9/11 as his reasoning. But it was Saudis that attacked us on 9/11. And then here he is, seems to be in cahoots with them, you know, this time around. And then when you look at it, it seems another collusion here just as much as a collusion in Russia. So this could be a bigger scandal than what we thought.
Colonel, what do you think?
I think Michael may be onto something. There's, there is certainly the possibility that there is something going on between the Trump and Kushner families on one side and the Saudi Arabian monarchy and business interests on the other. We don't know right now exactly what that is, but we certainly have some idea that there were real estate transactions between the Trump organization and several elements in Saudi Arabian society. So that much is definitely known. As far as the collusion aspect and in the political sense, there could very well be a degree of collusion there because the Saudis have indicated that they intend to buy about $110 billion in U.S. weapons. And, of course, that's a really big number, and really big numbers make President Trump very, very happy. When you see that, President Trump, obviously, his commercial instincts are going to be such that he's going to be very reluctant to do something that will hurt the possibility of a sale of that magnitude or a series of sales of that magnitude to the Saudis. So on the one hand, you know, it could be collusion that is, factored in by money interests. And on the other hand, there are political reasons and geostrategic reasons to keep the Saudis on our side, especially if we're going to go after Iran. That you have to be backed up by Saudi Arabia. It just doesn't really work any other way. And that... that becomes a problem for President Trump, because if the Saudis are seen to have done this and the Turks can provide even more proof than they already have, then the political relationship that we have with Saudi Arabia may very well be called into question.
Okay, thank you for your calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Oh, we see the United Nations, Colonel. We see allies of ours, such as the UK, Germany, France, really crying out not only for an investigation, which Turkey is conducting, but seem to be, at least in my opinion, more vocally angry with Saudi Arabia and less believing of the Saudis. We don't see that strength, I feel, from the president. Why do you think that is? And what does that do to us relationship-wise in the international community?
Well, I think it certainly, Leslie, puts a strain on our relationships. We've historically been pretty much in lockstep, especially with Britain, but also with France and Germany when it comes to issues like this. And the fact that they are calling out in a more direct fashion for an investigation, they're doing some actions on their own with the Turks to help them behind the scenes when it comes to the technical aspects of this investigation. It points to the whole idea that we're abrogating our leadership responsibilities around the world. Not that we necessarily have to get into the Turks' business as they're doing this, but it is in our interest to find the truth, and it becomes really important in a case like this because there are so many international implications. Not only the fact that we have a journalist who has allegedly been killed, but we also have the situation where one of our allies is implicated in that killing. And the fact that the ally is being implicated questions the very basis of our connection with that ally. But you get to exercise a lot less influence over that ally if you don't take leadership roles around the world. So whether it's the United Nations, you know, where the Secretary General has come out and very specifically said that this needs to be investigated, or, you know, our European allies, these types of situations really call for a one-voice, unified message of all democratic elected governments. And when you don't have that, then it becomes really hard to enforce standards of international behavior that allow for journalists to practice their craft around the world, that allow for freedom of expression and increase the freedoms around the world in countries that don't necessarily enjoy them to the level that we do.
And if, you know, you talk about getting to the bottom of the truth, or, you know, investigating as everyone does, will we really ever know the truth, Colonel? Because I even am seeing things online today where there are alleged, not confirmed yet, reports coming out of Turkey that the Saudis are going to say, yeah, he died, but it was an accident.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, the Saudis are definitely going to say that. But one thing that gives me at least a glimmer of hope is that the Turks seem to be trying at least to put on, you know, do a thorough investigation. Their investigators spent 9 hours in the consulate today, and they've also been given access to the residence of the consul general in Istanbul, the Saudi consul general, where the body is supposed to have been taken. So if their forensics teams, you know, are good, and if they get lucky to some extent, they may be able to tell some things that we otherwise wouldn't be able to tell. And they might offer some proof, you know, through, you know, blood spattering patterns, you know, things like that, you know, the kind of the grotesque business of forensic science. That kind of analysis is going to be crucial to helping us determine what the truth is. And, you know, there's at least that that glimmer of hope that they can do that. And it's also in Turkey's interest to do that, because they're not happy with the Saudis for a variety of different reasons. And if they can do something that kind of hurts the Saudi position, they're willing to do that. And that's, you know, more or less on the bigger stage here. But that's what they're trying to do. So if, you know, for once the Turks are on the side of truth and justice, we should welcome that.
I want to know, do you find it ironic, because I do, Colonel, that Turkey, who has been abominable to its journalists and has even imprisoned, and some are imprisoned as we speak there in Turkey, shaking their finger at alleged behavior of the Saudis with regard to one of their journalism professionals?
Oh, yes. Well, I tell you what, you know, hypocrisy is one of those things that that shows up at you know, some of the most inconvenient times. But yeah, the Turks, of course, are notorious for their behavior toward journalists, toward anybody who is a dissident, who's even thought to be remotely opposed to the leadership of President Erdogan. You know, as an example of that, many civil servants and military officers in the Turkish armed forces and in the Turkish government have been purged, especially in the wake of the coup attempt 2 years ago. And it is exceptionally ironic that the Turks are the ones that are pursuing this. So what that really means is that, you know, we hope that they are doing their job and that they're allowed to do their job in a way that that gets to the truth of this. But we have to take what they tell us with a grain of salt because of, you know, they have an interest in changing things around to help them. And they also don't have the most stellar reputation when it comes to truth and justice in their own country. So that's a very well-placed, you know, thought there. And it is, you know, something that we have to be very careful of as we examine reports from Istanbul and Ankara.
Let me see what we got here for time. We only have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to give you the last word, Colonel. What do you want people listening to know and come away with regard to this matter, something that you'd like to tell in the last 60 seconds here?
Sure, Leslie. Well, it's, you know, this is probably the most important thing that has happened when it comes to geopolitics in the Middle East. And the reason for that is it could change the way we have our relationships with the Saudis. It could also affect how we go forward with Iran. As we all know, President Trump has abrogated the U.S. Part of the Iran nuclear deal. And now if Saudi Arabia is compromised in any way because of their actions, that is going to make it a lot harder for us to pressure the Iranians. So it's going to make a tough neighborhood even tougher, and that's going to be the hardest thing that we have to deal with, I think, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Colonel. Love having you on. Miss you. Look for, I'm glad, nice hearing your voice today, Colonel. Thank you. Colonel Cedric Layton, the website for him is cedriclayton.com. That's C-E-D-R-I-C-L-E-I-G-H-T-O-N. On Twitter, follow him there. You'll get some great military analysis and really a great guy to know. Just very intelligent, knows his stuff, and a lovely man as well. Follow him on Twitter at Cedric Layton, C-E-D-R-I-C-L-E-I-G-H-T-O-N. I'm Leslie Marshall. Coming up live after this quick break, Talk Media News will join us with reports and updates. Back, so is he, Chief Foreign Correspondent for Talk Media News, live from the Big Apple, New York City, Luke Vargas. Hey, Luke, good afternoon. Lots to talk about. Happy Tuesday. We have a caravan south of us, approximately 2,000 people that are migrating from Honduras. This definitely seems to have worked the president into a flurry on Twitter. Tell us about that.
You remember this happened in April as well, when you had a caravan of about equal size that was coming up through Mexico, said they wanted to seek asylum at the U.S. border. And Trump and folks like Jeff Sessions got worked up into a real tizzy about this, implying that these people basically wanted to breach the U.S. border, far from what they really wanted to do and what ultimately only 150 people did in Tijuana, which is enter into a process that many tens of thousands of people enter into every year at the Tijuana border, applying for asylum the proper way. This time around, the president is basically insinuating the same sort of threat is posed by these about 2,000 migrants fleeing probably an even more desperate situation in Honduras. And he says if the Honduran government doesn't stop this caravan, they're going to lose all U.S. foreign assistance. First off, they
what?
Guatemala. How would you do that? And the second is the U.S. assistance going to Honduras is aimed at keeping migrants in that country, preventing violence, improving good governance. So it seems like that threat sort of cuts against the president's own limited, and if rather stingy, and program in that part of the world anyways.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. There are rumors, as you know, a lot of rumors that go around. How accurate is the rumor mill with regard to whether the president plans to fire James Mattis?
We are told that at this point, the defense secretary has not had any discussions with the president about leaving, saying he today on a trip over to Vietnam that he's 100% with President Trump. But it's one of those weird situations, a little like football, right? When the head coach has to keep defending while you're keeping the old quarterback in there every week. Why aren't you benching the guy? Eventually, it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you've got to make that, you know, starting quarterback switch. And I feel like it's a little bit of the same situation here with Trump when he's getting questions every day. And I think this is going to be sort of the momentum that might lead President Trump to finally pull the trigger on Jeff Sessions as well. It's just, you know, it's hard to stay in that job day in and day out when, you know, a question in every press briefing is about when is this person out the door. And I think once Trump has an idea in his mind that you're a Democrat, you're probably not too long for the administration. But at least the early signs are we are not going to see Jim Mattis get the James Comey treatment, where far away from Washington, D.C., you know, so Trump doesn't have to do the firing in person. He learns of his departure via social media or on the news. I think Mattis will live to survive another day. But another year, that's a whole different question.
Wow. Luke, thank you. Always interesting. And thank you for updating us here. Luke Vargas with Talk Media News. I'm Leslie Marshall. That's the end of the hour. When you're having a great time, time flies. Mark Grimaldi's our executive producer. Please follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. On Facebook, like our fan page, not me personally, our fan page. Go to facebook.com/ The Leslie Marshall Show. LinkedIn, you can link into me at Leslie Marshall. And on Instagram, I'm at Leslie Marshall Talker. Have a great rest of the afternoon. We'll be back with you later this week.